Welcome to the Growth Equation Podcast. We're your hosts, Brad Stahlberg
and Steve Magnus.
And we're interested in exploring the art, science, and practice of performance and well-being.
Whether on the playing field, in the office, or in the classroom, the principles of sustainable success are the same. There's a lot of noise and nonsense out there in this space. Our goal is to cut to the signal. Welcome to another episode of the Growth Equation Podcast. So this week, we're going to talk about something that a lot of us have been struggling with, including myself and Brad. It's a question we get asked a lot, which is how to handle our online presence, our digital devices during this kind of uncertain time when a lot of us are spending a lot more time at home, a lot more time on our computer and iPad and phone and all of that. And it's a struggle because those devices tend to have this pull of, getting us to go on social media, getting us to spend hours on Facebook or whatever have you, or hours searching the internet, or hours looking at COVID-19 news and trying to figure things out. And that pull is even higher now because we're on our devices a lot more. So we figured we kind of deconstruct and talk about what we're doing, what we're struggling with. And then we also have a special guest who's going to talk about some of the struggles and some of the solutions that they've used to deal with this digital device urge to spend hours kind of scrolling and go into it from there.
So I'm really glad that we're taking the time to talk about this topic. I think it will be like a therapy session for me as we talk about it, and hopefully for some of our listeners. Just yesterday, I was feeling like super burnt out, and I texted my wife, and I'm like, I think I need to schedule a 3-day vacation. She's like, vacation? Like, what are you talking about? Like you haven't done any public speaking. Everything's been pretty slow. And I realized that the issue wasn't vacation. The issue was I was spending a lot more time on social media than I normally do. And it's not like I was working harder. If anything, I'm probably doing less quote-unquote work. And perhaps that's exactly why I'm feeling burnt out, because I'm not spending time doing the things that energize and excite me. I'm spending a lot of time in social media. So I'm really glad that we're having this conversation. I think that it is also worthwhile anytime that we talk about social media to put up a huge disclaimer. And that is, social media is not bad. It is so easy to have these conversations and they turn into just bashing social media. There's a lot that is good about social media. Steve and I met on Twitter. This podcast would not be happening. We would not have two books. We would not have careers as writers if not for the internet. So many of our close relationships came as intellectual shared interest connections on Twitter that then became true, good offline friends. So the last thing that we want to do is bash Twitter. The scientific research shows something very similar, that every single large, massive study of social media, and now there have been a few, have very mixed results. They find that social media use can be very detrimental in some ways, and it can also be very positive. And the net effect is almost always neutral. There was one study that was a meta-analysis with over 200,000 people, and it made big waves because the authors were quoted saying that the correlation between social media use and well-being in either direction is less than the correlation of eating potatoes in well-being in either direction. So it's really important preface that the way that we look at social media, informed by the science, is that it is a tool, and it is a tool much like any other tool. You can drive a car into the side of the road and do great harm to yourself. You can drive a car and think everything's going well and get into an accident and not even know what happened. Or you can drive a car and get from place to place and have a really good life because of it.
So what you're saying is that we need to eat more potatoes. that's my takeaway. No, in all seriousness, I think that a disclaimer is important. And I think the way we should look at social media use is also that, like, our own habits and usage aren't necessarily good or bad. They change in the moment, right? So when we're launching a book, for example, like, I'm going to use it a heck of a lot more. And, like, for that brief period of time, like, I'm going to maybe go down the rabbit hole to a degree of, like, checking and all that stuff. And I need to be aware of it. But, like, using it more than normal during this that period of time, I think, is well within the bounds of okay, right? And it's all right, as long as at some point I can pull out of that. And I think that, you know, that's why a lot of us are struggling with it right now, is that we've been kind of knocked for a loop a little bit out of our routines. So our normal usage, our normal patterns of behavior have been disrupted. And whenever patterns are disrupted, we fill that time with something else. And when we aren't aware of it, or where we haven't stopped and paused and thought about it, a lot of times that time gets filled for us, you know, without us even thinking about it. And from the friends I've talked to, they've just kind of noticed that they're spending more time on social media more now than ever, even though their same systems are in place, their same, you know, usage limits or whatever are in place, because they're filling that time and space with something. And I think that's why it's an opportune time to talk about this, because it's, our lives are disrupted and we're filling that time. I know I certainly have. And one of the things I've struggled with is, like, first becoming aware of it, of aware of, like, my increased use and how it makes me feel, and then B, deciding what to do about it, because, like, my normal tactics don't exactly work, because I'm spending, you know, 99.9% of my day inside my house.
So with that, I think we should set the expectation that this is not just going to be a podcast, like another bashing social media, if you use social media, you're bad, social media is bad, bad, bad podcast. Hopefully what it will be is a nuanced look at the pros and the very real cons of social media use, and will hopefully leave you, and as I said, I need this just as much as anyone, with some tools on how to best evolve our relationships with our digital devices and the apps that we have on them, that both take us down rabbit holes and leave us feeling empty, and also that connect us and lead to potentially life-changing relationships. So with that, we're really excited to bring on our special guest.
Well, we're really thrilled to have our good friend and colleague join us for a portion of the discussion today, Mario Fraoli. So Mario lives a pretty full and robust life on the internet. He hosts a very popular podcast called The Morning Shakeout that is at the intersection of running and culture. He also writes a weekly newsletter by the same name that over the past couple of years has amassed lots of followers and traction and sponsorship. So Mario, a big part of his income is through these two endeavors. So he is somebody that has all kinds of skin in the game and all kinds of experience when it comes to living a professional life on the internet. Mario faces a challenge that Steve and I do, and that so many do as well, which is when the internet life and normal life converge. And it is very easy as somebody in this space to just say that, oh, every time I tweet, or every time I post, or every time I have a new name this thing put out into the internet, it's just marketing. I'm going to separate it from my identity. But that's a lot easier said than done, especially when what you're doing and what you're quote unquote selling is your ideas. So this is a topic that Steve and myself have talked about forever. And it's a topic that we've also discussed quite a bit with Mario, who has some really interesting insights. So we wanted to welcome Mario to the show. Thanks for joining us, Mario.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
So, Mario, I'll lead off. And just for listeners, if we're talking over each other a bit, we apologize again due to COVID. We're all virtual here. How have you been doing recently with your social media use, Mario? And could you walk us through perhaps what a good day looks like and what a not so good day looks like?
Appreciate you asking that. Recently, I haven't been doing great, to be honest. I hit a point last week, and we're having this conversation in late April, where I found myself just getting really irritable, overwhelmed, and stressed. And it came to a boiling point one afternoon last week where I was getting pretty short with my wife, and she told me to go take a walk. And while I was taking that walk, it forced me to think about why I was feeling the way that I was feeling and what I was going to do about it. And looking back at the previous 6 or 7 weeks, what had really jumped out to me, and I had the data to back it up because I get screen time reports, is how much time I was spending on my two main devices, my cell phone and my iPad. And for the past couple of years, I haven't had any social media on my cell phone. I took Instagram and Twitter off a while ago because they were distractions, but I had them on my iPad because it helped curb usage a bit. But I got into this routine where every morning, one of the first things I would do after getting out of bed would be to grab my iPad and check Twitter and see what was happening in the world, because the news is changing so quickly. I didn't want to miss anything, whether it was general COVID-related stuff or it were things that were happening in the world of running, which, as you described, is a big part of my job on a weekly basis, is offering commentary on this stuff. Or what you didn't discuss, I also spend a majority of my time coaching, and many of my athletes don't live near me, so those are virtual relationships as well. And I was checking to see if they maybe had texted me or sent an email or something came through Final Surge. And I just got in this really bad rhythm of constantly having my face buried into a screen because I was worried that I was missing something, or if there were a conversation happening, especially around running, I'd need to jump into it. And I've gotten into this trap before and pulled myself out of it. So a lot of it for me recently is just recognizing that I had let myself fall into a lot of these bad habits again, and they had developed over the course of the last 6 or 7 weeks. And I was noticing a big difference in terms of how I was feeling and how I was interacting with my wife. And that wasn't where I wanted to be. So I knew I had to do something and just look a little bit deeper into my relationships with these platforms and with these devices. And for me, if the temptation is there, I will try and sink my teeth into it. So what I ended up doing was just removing the temptation and actually taking Instagram and Twitter off of my iPad so that they weren't even there. I took email off of my phone so that I couldn't be scrolling, you know, at every dull moment that happened during the day. So yeah, I mean, that's a long-winded answer, but that's where I'm at right now as far as my relationship to digital devices and social media.
So there's a lot to parse out there, and I have a couple of follow-up questions immediately. And so the first is, and something that Steve and I often talk about, is we want to be careful not to just sit here and bash social media and the internet. I think all three of us met, or at least reconnected, over the internet. The internet is how we reach the people that read what we write, and it is also how we connect with them and get feedback. So the internet, social media, these are not bad things. They're tools in the toolkit. So when I think about overwhelm caused by social media, I think it can fall into a couple of different categories, and they're not completely mutually exclusive, but I'll do my best to separate them. So one, to me, is you are constantly checking the news, and the news is often hysterical and also not very positive, and it leaves you feeling helpless, and that's not a good feeling. Another is you are constantly putting stuff out and not getting the feedback you want. So you're getting all hyped up about this perfect blog post or perfect tweet, and then no one responds and you feel irrelevant. Another trap is the checking trap. So just checking constantly how many people have liked you, commented on you, retweeted you. And then I think the third thing is, the fourth thing is like the comparison trap. So you're scrolling and either explicitly or subconsciously, you're comparing yourself to others based on what they're posting on the internet. So where for you, Mario, like which of those tends to be where you get sucked in? And, you know, you mentioned taking it off your devices. That's great. What do you feel like you lose by doing that? And how do you also maintain a presence on the internet and like enjoy these things?
I think you nailed it. For me, it's a little bit of all four of those things to varying degrees. For example, when I put out a newsletter on Tuesday morning, there is this tendency to jump on Twitter and see if anyone has shared it or pulled an excerpt out and posted it to their feed, which oftentimes I ask them to do because that's how you end up growing the thing. And, you know, that's a trap that I fall into. There are plenty of other content producers.
But it's also a totally normal human thing. Like you put something out into the world and you want people to react to it. And I'm sure you're also genuinely curious how they react. And this is where I really want to dive deep. It's tricky because that impulse is a good impulse, but then that can so easily become like bad when you crave the feedback. Help me talk about how you navigate that, or if it's even possible to, or if you just need to make some clear boundaries.
Right. Well, that's the key right there, is making clear boundaries. And I've done that in the past with success, but for one reason or another, those boundaries got abandoned at one point. And that's how I found myself back in this position. So I have enough experience that I knew what I needed to do because I do spend a lot of my time on the internet. It is how I make my living. It is how I communicate with people. It's very important. It is, as you described, how the three of us all connected. But I think it can become overwhelming and all-consuming if you don't set boundaries and you're not careful. So where I've landed in the past, and again in the past few days, is I'll sit down, I'll hit pause. I'll just put a full stop on everything. I'll take these social media platforms off my devices. I will put the devices away for a while. And I just give myself the time and space to think about how I landed where I am and what I'm going to do moving forward. And for me, what that looks like is just setting limits on usage time and saying, hey, I am only going to check email at 9:30 in the morning and then again at 5:30 in the afternoon so that I'm not constantly checking in on it during the day to see if someone has checked in. I'll set those times. Same thing with social media is I'll schedule out a number of tweets and I will also set aside a period of time during the day where I can actually go scroll my feeds and interact with people. But if I'm not very deliberate about it, there's a tendency for me anyway to pick up the device and to see what has come in and what I might need to respond to. And oftentimes there's nothing there, but the way these platforms are constructed is they keep sucking you in, right? And let me just check. Maybe right now, maybe something came in the last 5 minutes. Maybe something came in the last hour or so. And that's a dangerous place to be. And it leads to these feelings that I described earlier. So for me, it was just setting boundaries and knowing what those boundaries are. And now moving forward, having the discipline to actually stick with them.
So one quick follow-up before I turn it over to Steve. Because I'm so curious about this. So I want to get a little bit deeper into where the rubber meets the road. Okay, so you set those boundaries and those are really incredible if you can stick to them. But you're just living your life through a normal day and you're feeling a little bit of insecurity or emptiness or discomfort or anxiety. And again, nothing's wrong with that. These are human emotions we all feel. You have the temptation to go to social media to get some positive feedback or to see what's happening or to do something to kind of take away that emptiness and anxiety. Like, what do you do in that moment? Because we all feel those urges. Even our listeners that have no kind of business need to be on the internet, a huge part of why we use this is to be able to fill those empty spaces. And again, it's not always a bad thing, but it can be. So what do you do in those instances, Mario?
Well, especially right now, right? I think a lot of this for me, as I've thought about it a bit more, is amplified by the fact that our actual human connection is limited. I mean, aside from waving to my neighbors from a distance, I haven't seen anyone in person besides my wife for the last like 7 or 8 weeks, however long we've been under these shelter in place orders. So I think there's that urge as well, that need for connection, and social media platforms, things like Zoom, Skype are great for that. And on some level, I think that's been factoring in as well. And if I need that, I mean, for example, if the two of us need to catch up, which we have multiple times over the last several weeks, like we'll set aside time to have those calls, or, you know, it'll happen randomly. And that's great. I mean, that's definitely filling a basic human need that we all have. So I think it's understanding when it's that and it is actually productive versus when you're just allowing yourself to go down the rabbit hole and allowing things to spiral out of control, which ends up leading to putting you in a pretty bad headspace or just not being able to make good decisions.
I think now more than ever that connection piece is important, because I found myself struggling more so than ever before, based on the fact that, like, normally we have this routine and this, I see people every day at practice and every day at work, but not having that, it creates you or gives this urge to fill that space somewhere else. And what I'm really curious on, Mario, is two things. Is first, you mentioned in there, like, you were able to step back and pause and give yourself time and space to think. Now, that seems like such a simple concept, but it's incredibly tough to do, right? It's incredibly difficult to have the self-awareness to be like, okay, I need to step back, evaluate these things. And I would venture to guess, and myself included on this, is we don't take enough time, or we don't take the time to step back and ask, is this the path I want to head down? Mm-hmm. So I'd love to like dig deeper into that and see how that works for you. Like, how do you have that awareness to be able to step back and pause for a moment?
Yeah, I think you put it really well. Simple is not easy. I can talk about that. You're like, well, that sounds really easy. You just step back and leave this stuff alone. But in practice, it's actually really hard to execute. And I found for me, like, I need to actually create that separation. So that is shutting the laptop and maybe even putting it in the closet, going for a walk with my dog and leaving the phone at home just so I don't have any input coming in, good or bad, just like really removing that from the situation. Or if it's in terms of social media, as I described earlier, taking this stuff off of some of my devices to create this barrier of entry. So it's just not easy for me to go in there and click around. So I found for me, and I know other folks have been or had success setting screen time limits and limiting usage, but I literally have to separate myself from a lot of these devices and give myself the space to go out and do something free of interruption or input, whether that's walk with the dog, go for a run, you know, sit down at the kitchen table with my wife and just have a conversation and devices being out of the room. Or it's just locking myself in my office and not having any devices in there, even taking my computer out and sitting there with a notebook and writing this stuff down. So for me, writing is thinking, and I have a lot of these thoughts in my head. So I have found that when I can sit down with a notebook and it's distraction free, there's not tabs open, there aren't alerts coming in, and I can take these thoughts that are in my head, knowing how I feel and what I need to do, and actually write them down and then read it back to myself, I've found that sets me on the path to making better decisions and gives me clarity in terms of my situation and helps me to better move forward.
Yeah, what I'm hearing there is developing the awareness to know what works for you and then taking deliberate action on it.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, I think it's important to like put that clearly, because, you know, what works for you might not work for me. And it's having that awareness to understand like what you need to do. You know, I'm in the same boat. Like, I've tried those you know, screen limiting time on my phone and all that stuff. And what inevitably happens is I just enter the password
and then like I use it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a big enough barrier for entry. So I need the larger barrier for entry like you in the terms of eliminating it. One thing I wanted to circle back to that I wrote down is the setting times for you to reply to email. Mm-hmm. I think that makes a lot of sense, but I'm wondering, do you ever face the pushback, or how do you deal with the expectations that a lot of people have now, which is that like communication is so instant that if you don't reply quickly, like people get frustrated or ask, or like, hey, did you send that email? Like, do you battle that at all?
Yeah, a couple things. Just to go back real quick to one of the last things that you said, I think for me, as I described how I will set periods of time aside during the day when I will go post the social media or scroll, I've also found by actually scheduling in periods of quiet and solitude and being device free and being very deliberate with that makes just as much of a difference on my end of things. Because if you're just waiting for that time to open up, it's never going to happen. We've all got pretty busy lives. We have jobs, we have kids, we have, you know, in normal times, like a million different things going on during the day. If you're just hoping that free time is going to open up, it's not going to happen. You've actually got to schedule it, or I found that I've got to schedule it. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. But it's so valuable to me that doing so makes a big difference. So I just wanted to make sure I got that in there. In terms of email and the expectation of urgency, I personally have set expectations with my close friends, with my family, and with my athletes that email does not equal urgency. I tell all my athletes, look, if you want to talk about long-term planning and stuff that is not immediate, or you just have thoughts that have been ruminating in your head that don't need an immediate reply, by all means, send them to me by email. I can take my time and get back to those in a timely fashion. If you have a question about how to adjust your workout for tomorrow for X, Y, and Z reasons, text me or call me. To me, like text and call, like that to me signals like immediacy, and someone needs an immediate reply most of the time. So that's a hard thing to do, but it's something that I've been aware of, and it's an expectation that I've been trying to set with the people in my life that I communicate with frequently, that email does not equal urgency. And in my work life, for people who I'm not super close to and they send email my way, I've just found 99.9% of the time, the messages that come in aren't super urgent. My dad told me a long time ago when I was a kid, he's like, there are very few things that can't wait till tomorrow. And I look at email as one of those things. Like most of the time, it can wait till tomorrow. And in very few cases does anything ever come through if I sit back or step back, that really needs to be responded to right away. But again, I work for myself and I've been able to set those expectations. I think in a corporate environment, when you're on a team, when you're in an office, a culture develops. And a lot of those cultures in office environments around email, there is this sense of immediacy, or they use it as like, hey, I'm going to send you an email. I expect you to reply right away. But I've just always taken the view, at least for the last several years, and set the expectations with the people that I communicate with often and that I'm close to, that email does not equal urgency.
So I've got two questions for you, Mario, and they're only quasi connected. So I'll parse them out one, two. So the first is this. So you are super successful as an entrepreneur that, again, offers a super valuable service on the internet. How many Twitter followers do you have?
I mean, last I checked, it was like 15,000 or 16,000 or something like that, but I haven't looked in a while.
Okay. And Steve, what about you? How many Twitter followers are you at right now?
I don't remember. I think it's like 40,000, 40 something thousand.
44. Okay. And I'm right there with Steve. I think I'm low 40s, high 30s. Super easy for us to say, don't worry about Twitter. What do you tell someone that is really trying to build something, or somebody that's working a normal job that sees your newsletter and says, wow, like that's super inspirational. That's a path I can take. I know it is the reality, whether it's good or bad. When I pitch a large publication to write a story, or when I try to sell a book, and Steve knows this too, the first place that they're going is to Twitter. And if they see a lot of followers and engagement, that helps. So what do you tell people if it's like, oh, easy, and I don't know the answer. That's why I'm asking you, Mario. What do you tell people where it's like easy for these guys to say that? They're already situated.
That's an interesting question. I've never really given it much thought because I haven't put any real effort or intention into trying to grow my Twitter following. I remember I joined Twitter in 2010 when I started working at competitormagazine.com, and I've always enjoyed the platform. It's connected me to people like you guys. It's been a place where I can interact with a lot of people where otherwise you couldn't. It's a place where I've found ideas. It's a place where I've been able to share thoughts and interact. But on my end, it's all been very organic, and I haven't been super, while I'm deliberate about when I will use the platform now, I haven't been super strategic about, you know, how I've been, you know, how I've been utilizing it. But it's like anything else in life. It just takes time to get to places that you want to be. I mean, I'm working for myself now as a coach, writer, and podcast host, and that's been a dream of mine for a long time. But those seeds started getting planted like 16 years ago. And it hasn't been a very straightforward path or process to, you know, get to this place. And I honestly, as I was saying earlier, like I can't remember the last time I actually looked at my Twitter followers. It's not something I monitor on a very tight basis. Same thing with like my podcast. The only time I ever look at the numbers is when Chris, my sponsorship director, needs something from me and I have to go look it up. So, you know, I think it's just focusing on the work itself. And oftentimes a social media platform like Twitter, that's not the work. It helps support the work in a lot of ways. But the real work is in the coaching, is in the writing, is in the producing of, you know, the main content, the stuff that, you know, you own and can put your name to, and using these other social media platforms to help support it, tends to be, you know, the best strategy, or at least the way that I've thought about it. I don't know if that answers your question.
I love that. Just briefly, then I'll turn back to Brad. I love that. And I think that's such a good, important point, because a lot of times we see the end result and be like, oh, Brad, Steve, Mario have a lot of followers or have a big newsletter. But it didn't start out as this mission to get a lot of followers. I think I started Twitter at about the same time, and it was just a way to interact and to send ideas out into the space and see what happened on them. And the same with blogs or newsletters or whatever I've helped to create. It's the same ideas. None of them have started as like, I'm going to get to 50,000 followers or, you know, 10,000 subscribers or whatever have you. And I think like keeping that in mind is almost like playing the long game. The short game is like, how quickly can I get these numbers up? But the short game often kind of fails quickly.
And I think better for emotional health. When I go on any platform with the intention or with the like the deliberate action to try to gain followers, I generally don't feel great after, whether I gain them or not. So if I am thinking like, oh, what tweet is going to take off and help me gain followers, or what person do I need to respond to in order to gain followers, I can play that game for, you know, an hour or two a week and be fine. But the minute it's more than that, I just start to feel like not great. Whereas when I use these platforms to actually like test interesting ideas and share ideas and genuinely connect with people because I want to, then I actually feel pretty good, and I in the amount of usage can go up. So for me, it's like, it's never great if I'm on this stuff all day, every day, but 2 hours spent intentionally trying to gain followers versus 2 hours spent just being a curious person, those are a very two different hours, and they leave me feeling very differently. So I think that's a really good point that both of you raised, and an important one for our listeners. Mario, on the topic of feeling, can you talk to us just about judgment and self-compassion with this? Because if I circle back, a huge theme to your own method for device hygiene seems to be like just paying close attention to what you're doing and how you're feeling. So that means that you're often going to catch yourself doing things that aren't great and feeling not great. So how do you work through that? And what happens when you judge yourself harshly? And are there ever times when you judging your device use is actually worse than the device use itself? Because that's something that I struggle with a lot.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of us struggle with judging ourselves in various areas of our life. And I think to your point, an important step is just recognizing when you're doing that and not being so hard on yourself. And again, that's a lot easier said than done. But what that looks like in practice is just recognizing that you're being very critical of yourself. And much like I described earlier, for me, what I've tried to do is just step back and ask myself, why am I feeling this way? And oftentimes I'm not feeling great, which is why I'm asking myself like why I'm feeling that way. And then I try to work backwards and figure out like what led me there. And that often helps me to unwind things and get me into a better place where I can be less critical of myself, but also just realizing like it's okay. Like it's part of being human. Whether it's, you know, our social media usage or, you know, our output at work, or if we're being a good husband or father or whatever it may be, like we're always going to be hard on ourselves and critical on ourselves. And I think it's just like recognizing that when it happens and being able to hit pause and step back and ask yourself like, okay, why am I feeling this way, you know, in this moment, and just come into that understanding, because that's going to give you the perspective that you need to move forward.
Thanks, Mario. I think that that's a really good spot for us to wrap this segment, because, you know, that to me encapsulates your method for dealing with this, which is just pay close attention, treat it as a practice, do it over time, constantly adjust as you go. My guess is if we had this conversation with you 2 months from now, you'd be giving the same advice, but you might be in a very different situation. And some weeks are going to be good, others aren't. And keeping this as an evolving thing and not trying to be perfect, but just trying to be good enough is so, so important.
Well, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. None of us are ever going to be perfect in any area of our life. And I think that word evolving, like it's constantly evolving, and that's okay. And that's part of the acceptance, is that all of this is, you know, evolving, and you're going to have your highs and you're going to have your lows, and they're all just, you know, much like bad patches in a race, they're all just temporary. You just got to keep, you know, working through and knowing that with some time, you know, with some patience, with the right amount of self-awareness, you can come out the other side.
Well, thanks again, Mario, for joining the show. We really appreciate you taking the time. To our listeners, hope that you found that conversation valuable. If you have any interest in the sport of running or running culture, we couldn't recommend enough Mario's podcast, The Morning Shakeout, and Mario's newsletter by the same name. And you can bug Mario on Twitter during the day at Mario Fraioli and see if he's practicing what he preaches or not.
And you can email me too, but it might take a while before I get back to you.
All right. Thanks, Mario.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Wow, what an insightful conversation with Mario. Really glad that he could join us today.
Yeah, you know, it really was. And I think what was nice is he went deep on both his what he experienced and also his process. And I think a lot of times when we talk about this social media, we stay on the superficial level and we just talk about, oh, take this off your phone, or oh, you know, minimize the time that you spend online. And I think what was nice is Mario kind of laid it out on the reality of like, these are the urges I felt, like this was what it made me feel like. I needed to have the ability to step back, and then I needed to take deliberate action that worked for me, not necessarily other people, but like for me, myself.
I also think a really interesting point that Mario brought to light that we can unpack a little bit more is just how in the current environment where many of us, if not all of our listeners, cannot gather in person as they're accustomed to, that, of course, there's going to be more of an inclination or an urge to connect using these digital tools. And that's not always a bad thing. It can just become a bad thing.
Yeah, you know, we talk about this a lot, but we have to fill our needs, right? Our basic needs. And if you look at self-determination theory, that's autonomy, mastery, relatedness, or belonging. And I think this is a great example of, because of an extreme change in circumstance and situation, now our needs aren't going to be met, right? In our daily life, maybe we had this need for belonging met through our workplace, through our friends, through hanging out with others or connecting with others. And all of a sudden, almost in an instant, like that is gone for 6-7 weeks, whatever it is. And we fill that hole with something. And I think it's not only our needs that are we have to fill, but it's also our time gets changed, our routine gets changed. So we fill in that time and space with something, right? Mm-hmm. So it's this weird thing where we've been thrown for a kilter and now we're filling it. And I think a lot of times we fill it without being aware that we are.
Yeah, we're only aware after because suddenly we don't feel so great because we've spent our day on social media doing things that, you know, that might not be as nourishing as other activities. I also think, to your point about belonging, I think there's a big part of it too where it's just needing to feel relevant. And I can speak personally, when I am highly engaged in an intimate community, my friends, my colleagues, completely separate from social media, I find myself caring much less about social media. Mm-hmm. If I spend a couple of days with good friends, hiking, talking about books, just hanging out, my urge to be relevant on social media is almost non-existent because I'm relevant in my actual community. When I have periods of time, currently, where that community relevance is gone, that's when I personally feel more of an urge to then go tweet something out with the hope that it's going to resound really well and I'm going to get this sense of relevance. So something that I think about a lot is just this notion that it's so much better to be a celebrity in your neighborhood, like your actual physical neighborhood, than it is to be a celebrity on the internet. And someone that I talked to about this for an upcoming book project is the singer and songwriter Mike Posner. And Mike decided that after his latest album came out, which was like a huge hit, that rather than do the whole tour and late night TV shows and basically the whole celebrity thing, he decided to more or less unplug and walk across the country. And what he told me is that he realized that when he is playing an acoustic show in a park for 25 people, he has zero inclination to go make an Instagram post to his million followers. But when he's alone, oh yeah, he's like, bring on the Instagram. So I think that a lot of this is just like, it is that human need for belonging. And I think certainly also to be relevant. And when you're relevant with an intimate community, you don't need to be relevant or you don't feel as much of an urge to be relevant on the internet. Whereas when you're relevant when you don't have that, you do feel more of the urge. And I'll say, I'm going on a long time on this because clearly I'm figuring this out for myself right now. I think that something that I struggle with is just that. And, you know, when you're not feeling like you're relevant in your community, it's easy to try to fill that void elsewhere. When in this time, the answer is probably to pick up the phone, pick up Zoom, pick up FaceTime, and get closer to what will actually make you feel relevant.
Well, that's why platforms like Facebook do so well, right? It creates this almost false sense of relevance and that you have a voice and that you're heard, right? You can go on Facebook, you can do a post, you can comment, and other quote-unquote friends will reply. And sometimes those friends are friends in real life, right? But it doesn't give you that same it doesn't fill that need in the same way of like true belonging and connection. It fills it at a superficial level. So I think you're right in the sense that maybe it's about recognizing what that urge is about. So when you feel alone and you have this tendency to get on Facebook or get on Twitter or whatever have you, is instead like fill that urge with something that might give you more value or might give you a better sense of filling that need or might not leave you with that aftertaste of like disgust that you get from spending hours on Facebook or Twitter or whatever social media you have. And that might be picking up the phone and calling someone at this point or hopping on a Zoom meeting or FaceTiming someone. And I think replacing that urge is almost like forming a new habit of, I feel this, I'm going to fill this with something that is productive versus something that is might help a little bit, but could also hurt. In that sense. And I think that, you know, when I look at where we're struggling right now, I think that part of it is that our routines and our habits have been thrown off so much that we're having to fill not only our basic needs and not only our time, but, you know, our routines and all of that in a variety of different manners, you know, and it's exacerbated by the fact that we have this underlying almost stress of the situation, which I think activates another, maybe not basic need, but another need, which is this need to know or need to understand. Yep. And where when we're dealing with uncertainty, like we are now, that need to know goes up, right? And we need to, you know, figure out or close that gap between known and unknown to make us feel better. So it's like, we're dealing with this mess of needs and trying our best to fill them. And if we're not aware, kind of like what Mario said, like those needs are going to get filled anyway. So it's better to be deliberate on how we're filling those versus letting the social media, Facebook, Twitter, etc., kind of move into that space.
And I think a good spot to end today's episode is probably with some concrete action that our listeners can take and that I certainly know that I'm going to toy around with. And I think on the posting side, super helpful to get in touch with your urge and then act accordingly. So to make this real, if you have a really interesting idea or you have something that you want to share because you think it will be helpful or will make people smile, or will make people aware of something that they want to know, go share it. Don't think twice. If you are feeling a little bit lonely or empty, and you have an urge to go to Twitter to tweet, or to go to Facebook to post, again, I use Twitter because that's the platform I'm on, but if you have an urge to then go fill that emptiness or that sense of relevance by sending something out and hoping to get feedback, don't act on that urge. Don't judge yourself, but just realize, say, huh, like, this is purely an urge to feel emptiness or to feel loneliness. What can I do that's more valuable? And let those urges guide when you post or when you don't. And then in terms of information gathering, I think it's very similar. If you are just struggling with uncertainty and the way that you're trying to meet that need is to just literally fish for information that is going to help reassure you, do something else with that time. If you're checking the news once or twice a day because you want to be aware of what's going on, that is great. So again, I think it's like really getting in touch with what's the underlying driver to these things and then following that driver and really deciding like, is this driver something that is wholesome for me based on my values that's going to not give me the aftertaste, or is this driver something that's not? And for those that are trying to build a brand, I think it gets back to it. If your driver to go post is simply, I want to post something because I think it's going to do really well, maybe you set aside a half an hour a day for that. And then that really just becomes marketing. But the rest of your use on the internet, the urge should much more be around, I genuinely want to share this. And my guess is that's going to leave all of us feeling a lot better after.
Yeah. And you know, you hit the nail on the head in terms of, I think it comes down to awareness of urges and awareness of the feelings that come with it, but also awareness of what you're trying to get out of it, and then taking deliberate action, right? Deliberate action on, if I feel this urge, what am I going to do about it? Like, how am I going to fill this need? Don't let something else fill your time or space and just kind of weasel it its way in there. And if we can do that, we're going to be in a better place. And like you said, that's really freaking hard to do. Like, it's easy to talk about, but it's really hard to do. So be kind to yourself while you're going through this.
Yep. Do not judge yourself. I was going to say the same thing, and pay close attention, because the times when you fail are a lot more instructive than the times when you succeed. So when you feel that urge and you don't follow it in the right way, and then you get sucked in the rabbit hole, and that night you feel gross, don't judge yourself for messing up, but sit there and really feel what it's like to feel gross. And the way that this plays out in real life, it's not an on or off switch. I can tell you, for me, I've gotten to the point where I become aware that I'm doing it after a day. It used to be a month, then a week, now it's a day. Hopefully I can get to a point where it's a few hours. But the point is, it's not like you're just magically going to fix this behavior. It's something that, as Mario said, you have to constantly keep paying attention to, constantly keep evolving, being aware of the urges as we uncovered today, but then also seeing what you get when you break your quote-unquote rule, and really seeing how that feels, because it's that feeling that's going to help you follow your rule a little bit better the next time.
And I think that's a great place to end. So we'll leave that advice with you guys. This is a little different format than our normal episodes. If you've been a longtime listener with an interview, please reach out to us on Twitter or at our website, thegrowtheq.com, to let us know what you think of this format. And as always, please review and rate the show on iTunes or wherever your podcast listening takes place, because it really helps us grow and develop this show into what we want it to be.
Thanks for listening to the Growth Equation Podcast. Learn more about our work and find show notes at our website, www.thegrowtheq.com. Follow us on Twitter, at B. Stahlberg and at Steve Magnus. And if you like what you listen to, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, as this goes a long way in helping it reach others.